the industry as a whole has lost about 58% of its revenue. So it's about a $35 billion a year industry. And so we've estimated that about $20 billion was wiped out just in 2020.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jay Croft, and welcome to the Optimal Aging Podcast, where we discuss the business of exercise, healthy living, and well-being for people 50 and over. Each week, we explore what healthy living means for millions of people over age 50 and what's coming next, with a focus on communications, content, and making powerful connections. On last week's episode, I told you briefly about a new bill in Congress that could establish a $30 billion pandemic relief fund for the fitness industry. This week, I wanted to share more information about the effort, so I called two of the organizations supporting it and spoke with Jeff Perkins of the International Health Racket and Sports Club Association, also known as IHRSA, and with Brett Ewer, who heads government relations for CrossFit, one of the businesses involved. Others involved include Anytime Fitness and Orange Theory. They're all trying to drum up support for the bill, which was recently co-sponsored by a Republican and a Democrat in the U.S. House of Representatives. The measure has a long way to go before becoming law, and supporters are hoping that you'll write your representatives and senators to encourage them to sign on as co-sponsors, and then they hope the measure would get included into a bigger bill that could eventually get approved by both the House and Senate and signed into law by the president. They've done some really good work to make it easy for you to get involved on their websites, and I'll tell you about how to do that toward the end of the episode. I want to thank Jeff and Brett for their time. We'll hear from Jeff at IHRSA first and then Brett at CrossFit. And I will include links and contact information in the show notes. Okay, here's my conversation with Jeff. Let's just start by telling folks what the bill is and what it would do if it were to become law.
Yeah, sure. So the bill is called the Gym Mitigation and Survival Act, and that's the Gyms Act of 2020. It is a House bill, is H.R. 890 is the number. It was introduced by Congressman Michael Quigley, who's a Democrat from Illinois, and Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, who's a Republican from Pennsylvania. So it's a bipartisan bill. The idea and concept behind the bill, I think, is similar to probably what maybe people have seen has been proposed for the restaurant industry and was recently adopted for the live events industry, like Broadway and live music venues. And it's a $30 billion grant program for fitness facilities and structured to be run through SBA. It would provide some targeted grants up front towards smaller facilities, particularly in economically disadvantaged areas. But the idea of the program is to provide fitness facilities, both for-profit, non-profit, some grant funding to try to survive this pandemic.
Okay. So a bill has been introduced.
Correct.
That's a long ways away from saying you can apply to get some financial assistance, right?
Correct.
So tell us about the process ahead that the bill is likely to face now.
So that's a great question, Jay. In terms of process, particularly when we're talking about, particularly when we start talking around issues around COVID, these issues tend to get bundled together and packaged together into much larger bills. So it's very unlikely that this bill is going to by itself, go through the whole process through the House of Representatives, get passed and go to the Senate. What's much more likely, and what we're focusing our efforts and attention around, is getting this bill added into any larger bill that's moving through Congress, whether it's specific to COVID or not. But it's really probably going to be packaged together with something else and then move through. So right now, I think people are hearing a lot about sort of the reconciliation process that's, you know, tied to the budget. So the House is going to do a big budget bill, and the Senate will, in this case, likely kind of rubber stamp what they've done. And that will go through. So something similar to that, I think, is what we're looking for this to be included in. When the timing of that opportunity is, frankly, is not 100% clear right now. Our challenge and sort of our mission right now is to build as much support around this as possible. And and the way we can do that and sort of demonstrate that is to get other members of Congress to sign onto the bill as co-sponsors, because then they're on record as supporting the industry.
Right. So I want to ask you what our listeners can do to help. But before I do that, I'd like you to encapsulate the problem that the bill seeks to address, as far as, you know, the millions of dollars and the many, many jobs that we're talking about that are affected in the fitness industry.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, unfortunately, the pandemic has been awful for everybody. I think we can say that across the board. I think if you go back really to the beginning of the pandemic, you know, sort of there's been a familiar group of industries, particularly that were around closures, that were always together, always sort of in the headlines. It was restaurants, gyms, you know, movie theaters and bars were always the ones that were getting closed. And we're always among the last to reopen when states started reopening. And so we've been sort of grouped in with this cluster for everything, unfortunately, except for the relief end of things. You know, restaurants and bars and hotels have gotten preferential treatment under the PPP programs. Theaters and live venue events got their own special grant program, which is great, and they need it. And, you know, we're all supportive of that, but we've been a little left behind. So, you know, unfortunately, there's no curbside pickup for fitness. So, you know, our businesses have been severely impacted. We've seen about 44% of the jobs in the industry are gone as of the end of 2020. That's about 1.4 million jobs. About 17% of gyms have closed. We're expecting that number to go higher. And then if you're talking about places like California and the West Coast, Oregon and Washington, where they've had, you know, second closures that have extended a lot longer, that 17% number is probably a lot closer to 30%. The industry as a whole has lost about 58% of its revenue. So it's about a $35 billion a year industry. And so we've estimated that about $20 billion was wiped out. Just in 2020.
Right. So, okay. What else can people do? Can they contact the local media? Can they ask their members to participate in this similar awareness campaign? Anything like that?
Yes. So we have a campaign that's set up for people within the industry to reach out to their members of Congress. We have another one that you can share out with, you know, your clients and your members. That's, you know, more consumer facing, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So that'd be terrific to get them participating as well. Talking to the media, explaining the challenges and the pain that COVID has created would be enormously helpful. You know, the sort of sad irony of all of this is that, you know, we're all suffering as a result of a public health crisis. And our industry's entire business and mission is making people healthier.
Yeah.
And you know, we're finding ourselves sort of struggling to stay above water. And you know, we're kind of that key piece, I think, coming out of this pandemic. A lot of people's priorities have shifted, and they're putting a higher priority on their health moving forward, and it's going to be vitally important that our industry be there when this pandemic's over, so we can get Americans healthier. You know, frankly, we weren't healthy enough coming into this pandemic, and it's a big focus that we need to take more seriously. And I think, you know, our industry is a big piece of that puzzle moving forward.
What does the industry need to do besides support a bill like this? As we, let's say that we do come out of this by the end of the year or within the next year-ish or less or a little bit more, what have you. What does the industry need to do to be presenting itself as an essential business to maintaining and supporting public health instead of just something that's kind of fun to do if you feel like it? I feel like we're at a point in the last year or so because of all of this, but even before the pandemic, it was out there kind of floating around. I think the pandemic kind of crystallized the sense that if you want to be taken seriously as an essential business, as a real part of the public health dialogue, that you've got to present multiple levels, you know, and it can't just be, oh, here's a 24-year-old kid with a certification that he got from somewhere that says he knows how to lift weights, so go work out with him. And then how do you get from that to an industry that regulates itself, that has more rigorous standards, that promotes itself as a more responsible way to help people stay healthy? Am I asking too much, or could this bill be a part of that?
No. So I think this bill is a good launching pad for the industry. And frankly, I think this pandemic has that conversation that already started, as you indicated. Mm-hmm. We have portions of the fitness industry who are very focused on medical wellness and really see themselves as we are the entry point to the healthcare system. You know, if you can put more focus on prevention, mm-hmm. exercise and fitness, it has all these knock-on effects, both for people's health in the long term, but then also our healthcare spending, how our dollars are directed, everything. And so I think there's a much broader recognition now within the industry, candidly, that maybe people outside the industry don't view what we do the same way we do, and that we need to do a much better job of communicating that. And then even within the industry, realizing that we need to position ourselves and understand our role more clearly in what we are driving and providing in terms of benefits. And I think, you know, some of the impacts of the pandemic are making that very, very clear in terms of the number of people who are gaining weight. I know Kaiser had a survey that they did in August around the mental health aspect of being able to exercise and the social interaction. And they found that people 65 and older, 25% are reporting anxiety and depression, which is up from about 10% when they've done that survey previously. And they found, you know, they've been doing that survey throughout the pandemic, and that number's holding. So it's been elevated and people are feeling isolated. Perhaps more shocking, that number was shot up to 40% of adults under 65.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of different components that I think fitness touches on a lot of different pieces. So I think getting that, I think that industry sort of wide recognition and conversations underway. And I do think that there's going to be some real changes about how the industry looks at itself, approaches itself, and then how we, you know, position and talk about ourselves mm-hmm. to the world.
Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Hey, are you a fitness professional trying to grow your business with people over 50? If you are, then you need to know how to communicate with them, how to market to them, and how to get them to know you, like you, and trust you with their fitness and their money. We're talking about the baby boomers and more. People who are a little older and a little younger are still in this demographic slice that I'm talking about. People who are older than the typical client or prospect that gyms and studios go for, they have more time, more money, and better motivation to become excellent long-term fitness clients for gyms, studios, and trainers. Prime Fit Content is the only content marketing company designed specifically to help you engage people in this group and to distinguish yourself from competitors in your community. It's effective, it's easy to use, and it's super affordable. Check it out at primefitcontent.com. That's prime, like prime of your life, fit content, primefitcontent.com. Back to the show.
What is Ursa going to be doing in the coming months in addition to trying to get support for this bill? I know you all have been active before this, of course. But I'm just wondering what else can people look forward to, or how else can people get involved? I just see, we were talking before I started recording about how I think a lot of gym owners and small businesses in general feel kind of impotent in how to get involved or how to affect any change. And there's a lot of frustration with the political system. And I don't mean who you like as president. I mean just the basic nuts and bolts of how local legislation gets passed in your state. You know, that's a whole other can of worms, let alone on the federal level. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any other organized activity from Ursa that you can tell us about.
Yeah. So that's a great question. I think, you know, another recognition coming out of the pandemic is that we have to be continuously involved at all levels. You know, you have to be, if you're a business owner, you want your city council member to know who you are. That doesn't mean you have to call them every week. You don't, but invite them to come visit your facility, invite them to come see your gym. They'll take you up on it, but getting to know these people in advance. I always say that, you know, the worst time to be meeting someone is when you're asking for something. And so, you know, as an industry, I think we really have to put more of a focus on being proactively engaged, consistently moving forward towards that end. Ursa is organized and launching the National Health and Fitness Alliance. And the intent of that is to give lots of different pieces of the industry. So not just gyms, you know, not just studios, but suppliers, you know, certification organizations for personal trainers, to really try and give the wider industry a place where they can come together, have a voice, and set the priorities in terms of how are we going to advocate? How are we going to, you know, part of this, how are we going to fund it? But then, you know, what is the industry-wide priorities instead of having sort of clustered groups with similar interests, but not all on the same page. So we're really trying to create that space for the industry to come together and have a bigger voice and more united voice.
Okay. And with Ursa as sort of a focal point for that, or in a leadership role for it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I think we view ourselves as, mm-hmm. as the party that can help bring everybody together and, you know, set the table and then see how the group can set the agenda and move forward.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of different players in the industry aligned on this bill. Tell us about some of the effort that went into and why it's important to have such a diverse backing here. You know, it's not just Ursa, it's a whole bunch of organizations, right? Tell us about that.
It is. So we've worked very hard. We're working with another group called Community Gyms Coalition, which is comprised of a lot of some of the bigger brands in the fitness industry, like CrossFit, Planet Fitness, Anytime, and I'm forgetting many, many more.
Yeah, sure. But,
so we've been working very closely with them to promote the Gyms Act. We're also working with groups like the Yoga Alliance, ACE, ACSM, who are, you know, on the training side of things. A lot of the different supplier members who make the equipment are also participating. So this Gyms Act is kind of serving as a bit of the touch point to kind of help get this broader effort underway. And it really has pulled together some different pieces that maybe historically didn't always get along.
For older people, there's a whole other additional layer of why it's important to get to the gym, or at least to have someone come to your house, or at least to offer virtual training. And, you know, social isolation and depression and interacting with other people and being held accountable for yourself and all of these things that
maintaining independence.
Yeah,
fitness is huge for maintaining independence. Yeah, fall prevention, preventing osteoporosis. I know my mom's in Florida, and she does her water aerobics 3 mornings a week with her, with her group of friends. But if there's no water aerobics and there hasn't been a lot of water aerobics lately, she might go on walks, but she's not as active. Mm-hmm. She's also not as social. And all these things, as we know, have a lot of knock-on effects.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's an opportunity to explore there as far as education or outreach or a whole other layer. I think when the general public, and maybe true for people in power as well, when they think about a gym, they think about 25-year-old muscle heads or young people just having fun and sweating and, enjoying themselves. But for older people like your mother, it's really an important part of maintaining their physical and mental and social independence and vitality. I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Just kind of fishing, really.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's been a big message that we've been trying to deliver to elected officials, not just around, like the GYMS Act and relief, but also around why is it important to have access to these facilities, under proper regulations during the pandemic, and really hitting upon how critical it is, not just for, say, older people and for social interaction, but also for people who are pre-diabetic and people with chronic illnesses that can be treated by exercise, how people rely on these facilities to help them, maintain their lifestyle without having to go into medications or surgeries. It's really about trying to maintain that optimal level of health that you can, and to treat existing conditions and issues
and prevent comorbidities that make you more vulnerable to things like coronavirus.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Jeff, and everyone at IHRSA. Now here is Brett Ewer of CrossFit, one of the businesses involved in the Community Gyms Coalition.
Now, I want to stress to the listeners that this is a bill that's been introduced. This is not something that they can go apply for, right?
Yes, unfortunately, that is the case. We are pushing very hard. I just checked this morning. We are up to 23 co-sponsors on the bill, which is great, and it's improvement, and there's momentum, but we certainly need, we certainly need help to get this over the finish line.
And how can listeners to this podcast help? I mean, we all feel so, I think, ineffective or confused or helpless as far as what we can do about this situation. It's been going on for a year. As you said, the damage has been done. So tell folks what they can do to help.
I think the easiest way is to go to gymscoalition.org, go to the Get Involved page, and there will be a form there. You can put in your name, address, but most important, your zip code. And you can send a letter to your member of Congress using your zip code and your 2 federal senators, letting them know that you support the GYMS Act. This is a customizable letter. I encourage anyone who is inclined to reach out to customize it. And let your members of Congress know that you support this because you value GYMS.
But I want to back up just a second, though. I don't have to compose a letter to my congressman or my senator myself. There's something there that's already done, and I can customize it if I want to. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So I want to stress that you've made it really easy for people, because you hear the idea, write your congressman, and that's an intimidating thing to do. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to craft a letter. So you've made it super easy, right?
We have, absolutely. Everything is teed up and ready to go. But if folks are, energetic and would like to get more involved, I encourage you to please speak out on social media. call your member of Congress, call their DC office, call their district office, and let them know that this is something that you support and that they should co-sponsor it and see it through.
So remember, if you want to get involved, go to IHRSA.org, that's IHRSA.org, or JimsCoalition.org. They've made it really easy to identify your representatives and senators and send an email to them, either in a form letter that they've got there for you, or you can adjust it to customize it for yourself. And also, they've made it easy to post about it on social media to spread the word. So again, thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Brett. Thanks, everyone, for listening and being involved in what they're trying to do for the industry. Now it's time for three things I like this week. Number one, the anti-aging movement. The La Maria skincare brand has joined the cosmetics trend against so-called anti-aging with its line of products associated with menopause. The digital magazine Glossy says La Maria is part of a growing number of startups focused on menopausal women with its luxury wellness and skincare products for women going through hormonal changes. The site says 1.1 billion women will be postmenopausal by 2025, representing a $600 billion market. So, tell us again why the skincare industry is focused solely on this anti-aging myth. There's more money to be made in embracing the aging process, and it just, you know, makes sense. Number two, the Oculus Quest 2 virtual reality gaming system. My friend Kevin says he and his wife have become quick converts to the video games you can play with the artificial intelligence headset strapped to your face. And they're not alone. One article is written by a non-fitness fan who says he's been working up a sweat every day, quote, slicing, punching, and dancing, end quote, in his living room with the system. And here's what I love. He thinks it's made him fall in love with working out in the process. Now, I haven't played a video game since Ms. Pac-Man in the dorms circa 1983, but I'm really excited to learn about this, especially if it really does get more people up and moving every day. Number three, the amazing avocado. It's a nutrition-packed superfood that's good for you and versatile, and for some reason I can't get enough of them lately, and I'm not alone. Americans now eat an average of 7.5 pounds a year, up from 1.5 pounds just 20 years ago. Among other attributes, avocados are good for our cholesterol levels and heart health. They're rich in potassium, and they're a great source of the so-called good fats that we all need and that are important on the keto and other low-carb diets. Plus, and I just learned this, you can mash them up with cocoa powder to make a chocolate pudding. I'll include a recipe in the show notes. Couldn't be easier. That's it for this week's episode. Next week, we're going to be joined by my friend Cindy Miller, a communications expert here in the Atlanta area, whose public relations agency specializes in a few things, including crisis communications, which I raised in last week's episode as one of the main strategies you need in your small business communications plan. Cindy's going to share her thoughts on why small businesses need to be ready for when bad things happen. So look forward to that next week. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great one. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Optimal Aging Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Croft, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, I hope you'll subscribe, tell a friend, and write a review. All of that helps us grow our audience. I also hope you'll share any comments you have with me in an email or on social media, including suggestions for people I should interview or topics I should cover. You can learn more about me and my content business at primefitcontent.com. You can send me an email at j@primefitcontent.com. That's J-J-A-Y at primefitcontent.com. I'm also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So find me anywhere you like and be in touch. And again, thanks for listening. Join us next time.